For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
President Macron and I have had a chance to spend some time together. We went to private dinner last night with our wives, and just came to tell you that we're leaving.
Well, there you go. More transparency from the least transparent White House we've ever seen. Welcome back to the Tim Jones and Chris Harp Show, 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL. Boy, Chris, that's the sign of a true totalitarian tyrant when they can say the quiet part out loud and be proud about it.
Yeah, exactly. And he has kind of a built-in excuse because half the nation thinks he's crazy along with the press, but they won't say it out loud. So they'll just say it's just a Joe Biden moment or a 80-year-old senile man moment. So it won't really get the scrutiny that it really should.
Mm-hmm. And the state visit with Macron had one bizarre experience after another built into it. Did you all see the handshake, the viral handshake?
No.
Where, like, Joe Biden goes to, like, it's another one of these Joe Biden awkward, where he gets stuck. You know how Biden gets stuck a lot? And that's the sign, I know, of some various maladies as you get older. He goes to shake Macron's hand, and then he doesn't let go for a long time. And you can see Macron's kind of like, all right, dude, I get it. Can we move on now? And it's this bizarre moment where it's like he kind of, Joe goes somewhere else for a while. And then he, like, you can tell he, like, visibly comes back and they move on. It's just, mm-hmm. it's, and Chris, it's amazing that the media is more than happy to give a dementia patient or someone who's obviously experiencing some cognitive decline a pass, and they shouldn't, because he's the leader of the free world. The guy's got the nuclear football in his possession.
Well, they feel that he has cover now. If you read some of the post-election stories, Joe Biden is a genius. They should have listened to him all along on his strategy. He's been given new life. The governor of California said he will not challenge him. So it looks like Joe Biden, if he wants to run when he's 82 years old, will have a clear shot to the nomination. And once again, like they did during the campaign, they're propping him up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it looks like they're trying to hide him. Did you see that story? I caught a snippet of it where Biden is trying to convince his party to be done with caucuses. Did you see that today? Mm-mm. He's trying to convince the party that they should get rid of the Iowa caucuses.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They said that at the top of the news, that and which is a mistake to me. They want to move the Iowa caucus from first and replace it with South Carolina. The argument, of course, is Iowa is a predominantly white state. It's a small state. It doesn't represent the country or their constituency. And so it's just a clear placate to Senator or Representative Clyburn of South Carolina, who saved Joe Biden's presidency. And South Carolina has a 40% Democratic black base there. So it's a giveaway to them in that respect. I like this process that the campaign start in Iowa and in New Hampshire. Regardless that it's all white people, I like it because you have to go there and you have to shake a lot of hands and you've got to meet a lot of people, and the people get to know who you are. You can't fake it when you're in Iowa for 2 months, shaking hands, going to the pizza ranch where they all go and going to these different events. The people feel you and know who you are, and same in New Hampshire. And I think that's important, and it doesn't matter who the people are. These people get a good sense of who these candidates are.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it has everything to do with sheltering Joe Biden in a different way, like they did in the last electoral cycle, because they know they can't have him out there running a traditional campaign. Yeah.
And what they're going to end up doing, putting the South Carolina primary first, is you're going to have not as much of a grassroots candidates visiting these places. You're going to have millions of dollars spent on ad campaigns. Our elections, the primary elections, are going to be TV and radio and internet campaigns instead of pressing the flesh, meeting people in their homes and bars, restaurants, and you're going to lose that. And that frightens me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me
it
as well.
It saddens me more than
yeah,
it frightens
it's, it's
me.
Yeah, it's a real shame how much of our traditions and the things that we enjoy as Americans that they're trying to tear down. Hey, before I forget, Pocket Watching with JT, of course, our special Friday night show is on beginning at 8 p.m. Stell, is that correct?
That's right, yes.
8 to 10 p.m.
Tonight.
8 to 10 p.m. JT invades the studio, takes over, and it's a wild, woolly show, man. You all should tune in. You can tune in, of course, here, JT's YouTube channel, of course, any of our streaming options as well on Rumble or Facebook, et cetera, and so forth. Pocket Watching with JT and Stell Ponticus, 8 to 10 p.m. every Friday evening. Next week is the giveaways. We're having the St. Louis Conservative Christmas. We'll be starting to give away some really cool items, tickets, and such and so forth on all four of our shows. And, Chris, we've got a caller on the line right now. Sandra, good afternoon. Good afternoon, Sandra. Welcome to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show.
Good morning. Actually,
oh, good morning.
Oh, it's
I like that.
It's producer Cass.
It's Cassandra. Get it right.
Cassandra.
My question is,
yes,
if somebody were to be driving through the People's Republic of Illinois, what level of caution would you urge them to proceed with, especially if a congressman objected their travel?
I tell you what, and we travel east to visit my in-laws, South Carolina and New York. And sad to say, I've gotten several tickets in Illinois. So watch out for Illinois when you're driving for speeding, because they do enforce their speeding laws. And I've got the depleted bank account to prove that.
Yeah, so
this is what I hear.
Yeah, they don't mess around.
So, folks, know this is producer Cass from my morning show in Springfield, and Chris, she is driving. She's over halfway through her trip. She's listening to us now as she rolls through the St. Louis land. She's driving from Springfield to Chicago. Cass, here's the other. Oh, you know what, Cass? We've got producer Stell here, and he's a Chicagoland. Stell, what advice would you give a young 20-something female who's driving to Chicago?
Lock your doors.
Don't drive. Don't go.
Don't
yeah.
Go.
Turn around.
Lock your doors.
Turn around.
Window locks on.
Billy Long has urged me to do so multiple times.
Have fun on the lakefront. Enjoy downtown. Just be very cognizant and careful of your surroundings. That's the best advice I can give. But there's so much fun in the downtown area, so don't be afraid to go around and enjoy the Bean and Millennium Park, Grant Park, and all the area along the lakeshore. Do some shopping downtown. Maybe ride the L somewhere. Don't be scared of the L. But do keep aware of your surroundings.
Yeah, Cass, and I got some advice for you. Listen closely, okay?
Cat, okay.
Do not wear your MAGA hat and go get a Subway sandwich late at night in Chicago, okay?
On Lower Wacker Drive. Yeah, don't do that.
All right, don't do that.
One thing I was well warned of is that people in Illinois apparently don't believe in the Second Amendment. I was strongly cautioned to not bring my concealed carry with me.
I was going to mention that, too. To you.
Freedom and liberty doesn't exist across the Mississippi River, apparently. God bless Missouri.
There you go.
Amen.
Safe travels, Cass.
Yeah, Cass, be careful.
Thank you.
You're actually safe in most of Illinois, I think Stell would agree, outside of Cook County.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're pretty good. It's like most of Missouri. Cass, you be safe.
I'll keep you posted on Twitter.
Thanks
all
for
right,
listening.
See you.
All right, there she goes.
Bye, guys.
Thanks,
all
Cass.
Right,
there she goes. Producer Cass from the morning show in
Springfield. And all this time I thought her name was Casanova. No, I'm just kidding.
You know what? I don't know that I realized it was Cassandra because I call her Cassidy.
That's what I thought it was.
Yeah.
I thought it was Cassidy. I didn't know it was Cassandra.
She's got all these secrets. Yeah, Billy Long's been all over her. Congressman Billy Long's been all over her this week about the fact she's got some big deal up there with a bunch of her friends, and it's like an engagement party, and she has to go because it's her best friend. And Billy's like, just get a one-way flight and then drive back with them. And she's like, yeah, but they're leaving early, and flights are expensive right now, and I waited too long, and so on and so forth. So, to be 20-something again.
Exactly. Yeah.
Now.
No, the drive up there is fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
She'll be all right.
Just took the train.
She may, that's a good call, Chris. She could have just taken the train.
I mean, you gotta get, I've had some bad train experiences. You may not get there when they say you do. Have I ever told you guys my train trip from hell?
No, you have not.
Oh, my God. I was going, me and my brother were going to my grandfather's funeral in Tyler, Texas. And so the train is from Longview to Tyler. And so going down, it was okay, nice scenic. But I should have known something was wrong when we got to the station. The train was late. And we make a short, long story short, the train had two-hour stops. One, the conductor didn't show up in the other town, the switch with that train conductor. And then we rolled for a while, and then on the train in front of us broke down. So they had to try to get the train off the track, and we ended up getting to St. Louis like 4 or 5 hours late. It was supposed to connect to Chicago, and they were giving people hotel vouchers and stuff. But I was like, I will never ride a train again. It was only like my second time ever. But yeah, I call that the train trip from hell. Mm-hmm. It literally was.
I rode the train a lot as a kid, not just the Chicago area, interurban stuff, but around the country. My mom, my aunt, and I would take trips going to the West Coast when I was a little kid.
The scenery is beautiful.
It is. And we had no issues at all. But that was another time. That was back in the early, late 50s, early 60s. And train travel back then was awesome. Going from Chicago to Seattle and go through Glacier National Park and in Canada, take the Canadian Pacific through the Canadian Rockies to go to Victoria and in Vancouver. My goodness, those were awesome trips. But you're right. It's different these days.
Yeah. But the scenery hasn't changed.
True.
I mean, it was beautiful if you ever take a trip to Chicago. You see a lot of good scenery.
Sorry your train was late, though.
Oh, twice?
Man, that's brutal.
It was just...
That is brutal.
I was like, you have got to be kidding me. I mean, can you think of anything more boring being on a train with no internet service because you're absolutely in the middle of nowhere, just sitting there for 2 hours...
Looking at cows,
waiting for them to, another conductor to show up or to get the broken train off the track that's in front of you.
Wow.
Yeah, because the problem with the train is it's great when it runs on time and leaves on time.
Yes.
But unlike an airplane, if your plane's late or so, you still take off and you're there in 2 hours, right? The train, you're like, I still got 5 hours in front of me. So it's a whole different experience. The train ride from hell.
Yeah, it was. There we go. Literally.
All right. We're about to hit a break here. It's nearly 4:19 here on News Talk STL. When we come back, we're going to speak to Zach Smith, our resident legal eagle at the Heritage Foundation. I don't think we've talked to Zach in quite a while because we had Thanksgiving last week. That's right. We were not here. Zach will be joining us to talk about the latest, greatest, or not so much so, from the Supreme Court. There's a big hearing coming up on the web designer, who's being forced into doing something against her religious freedom beliefs. We'll talk about that case and so many others with Zach Smith of the Heritage Foundation. Next, here on the Tim Jones and Chris Sharp Show, 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
I think the country's going to have to learn about what's going on in this country. The majority of counties in this country have declared that they are not going to enforce state and federal gun laws. They have decided that they are going to essentially refuse to implement laws that are on the books. That is a growing problem in this country. And I think we're going to have a conversation about that in the United States Senate. Do we want to continue to supply funding to law enforcement in counties that refuse to implement state and federal gun laws? Red flag laws are wildly popular, right? You're just temporarily taking guns away from people that...
Do you want to withhold money for law enforcement?
I think we have to have a conversation about whether we can continue to fund law enforcement in states where they are refusing to implement these gun laws.
Let's talk about the constitutionality of that with our next guest.
It's all perfectly legal.
Zach Smith, legal fellow with the Heritage Foundation.
You know, I ask you a lot of predictions. Can you predict what the Supreme Court probably will do with this action?
Swooping in here as he does every Friday afternoon, our resident legal eagle, Zach Smith of the Heritage Foundation. Zach, you must have been on some super secret assignment this week because I couldn't find you when I was gallivanting around world headquarters at the Heritage Foundation. Your good friend, John Cooper, as Vic Porcelli calls him, the good John Cooper, gave me the tour of the place. I saw Hans and the gang up there, and I see you guys are under construction right now. You've got quite the world headquarters there at the Heritage Foundation in D.C.
Well, I'm sorry to miss you, Tim. I'm actually down in the free state of Florida right now, which is always a nice place to be in December. But we're under massive construction right now, which will hopefully be done sooner rather than later, but will allow us to host even more folks like you when they come to town to see us.
Yeah, Zach, I think you guys are putting up the Tim Jones and Chris Sarp's production studio for when Chris and I blow into town anytime.
Wilson, please come by and come see us, and we'll make sure to treat you well.
We will. We will.
Zach, an appeals court has stopped the special master review of the documents involved in the Mar-a-Lago case. What does that mean exactly, and what happens next?
Well, I'll give you the legal answer, Chris. Who knows? look, I think it was a very fascinating opinion in a lot of ways. It was actually written by three relatively conservative judges, Chief Judge William Pryor on the 11th Circuit there, who's well-known in conservative legal circles, and then also Judge Britt Grant and Judge Andrew Brasher, both of whom are Trump appointees. And I think one of the things that it is interesting about this opinion, Chris, mm-hmm. it really does dispel this notion that Trump-appointed judges, are just going to do, you know, his bidding no matter what. We've seen this play out time and time again, this false narrative by those on the left. But we've seen, you know, Trump-appointed judges, as should all appointed judges, are exercising their own judgment about what is the appropriate application of the law. Now, there can be good faith disagreements about what that is, but I think this does dispel that certain narrative on the left. Now, in terms of what happens next, I think we're going to see that play out over the next several days and weeks in Judge Eileen Cannon's courtroom. You know, this opinion from the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals basically said that Judge Cannon didn't have the jurisdiction, the legal authority to hear this case in the manner that she did. And so we're going to wait to see what happens. We don't know yet whether Trump and his legal team will appeal this decision, ask the Supreme Court to review it, but we should be finding out sooner rather than later.
Zach, I know you and your colleagues at the Heritage Foundation are up to your eyeballs in these religious freedom and liberty cases, and at the same time keeping an eye on the Disrespect for Marriage Act, as your colleague Sarah Perry calls it there at the Heritage Foundation, right. that the Senate just passed out. Zach, many of us watched with great disappointment. Many of our listeners have chimed in and said they were very disappointed that our own retiring Senator Roy Blunt was one of the 12 Republicans that helped advance that bill. Zach, my question for you is, you know, what will be the juxtaposition of the so-called Respect for Marriage Act and this case that the Supreme Court is going to hear, the case of the lady from Colorado who's being compelled as a web designer to engage in practices that she says are against her religious freedom beliefs? I mean, could this Supreme Court case possibly temper this Respect for Marriage Act and some of the harm it's going to do on people's beliefs?
Well, it's possible, Tim, but I suspect what we're going to see happening if this, you know, so-called Respect for Marriage Act passes is we're going to see more of these types of vexatious lawsuits, you know, lawsuits that are, I think, are really designed to harass certain individuals who adhere to traditional views on marriage and family and those sorts of things, like Lori Smith, this website designer out of Colorado, does. Disrespect for Marriage Act is going to make these types of lawsuits much, much easier. On top of that, it's going to also make it easier for governments, whether it's state, local, or federal, to target those individuals for potential harassment. Look, don't forget, the Biden administration pushed for and received funding for 87,000 new IRS agents, and we're already hearing rattling from some on the left that these agents should focus on and potentially revoke the tax-exempt status of churches, religious schools, and other organizations that adhere to traditional religious beliefs. And so, unfortunately, instead of tampering that type of conflict between, you know, current so-called civil rights laws and, you know, religious liberty, I suspect this act will in fact exacerbate many of those tensions, will make it easier for folks of many genuine religious beliefs to be targeted and harassed. And I think the people of Missouri are right to be very disappointed in Roy Blunt for his vote on this bill.
Zach, after a three-year court battle, a House committee has finally acquired Donald Trump's tax returns. And the dubious rule that this House committee can use to acquire them is basically they can go on a fishing expedition if they want. Just seems, you know, besides wrong, unconstitutional. Seems like you have to have some reason to acquire someone's personal records. Can you expound on that some?
Yeah, look, this is a troubling trend, Chris. So there's a specific statute that provides that certain House committees, in this case, the House Ways and Means Committee chairman, can make a written request to get tax returns and other information related to certain taxpayers. Now, I think what everyone should understand is this isn't a statute that only gives that power as it relates to elected officials or former presidents or current presidents. They can request the tax information on anyone. Mm-hmm. And not only can they request this information, they can actually publish these tax returns as part of the congressional record and make it public. Now, ordinarily, there are very strong safeguards, or there are supposed to be strong safeguards around tax information, tax returns, other personal information that restrict, you know, what the IRS can release, who they can release it to, what it can be used for, and there are stiff penalties if those provisions are violated. And so typically, you know, in order for a congressional committee to get this type of information, they would have to show there's a legislative need for it. Now, this, the House Ways and Means Committee, they said they're, you know, considering to revise, you know, how presidential tax audits are conducted to see if there's additional oversight, additional funding, that sort of thing needed. You know, I think Donald Trump and his legal team made a fairly compelling argument that this was by and large pretextual to get the tax returns. But look, setting aside the legality, Chris, Judge Trevor McFadden, who is the district court judge hearing this case, he said, you know, if the House Ways and Means Committee chooses to publish Donald Trump's tax returns, that'll be like inviting a plague onto their own house that will likely be reciprocated against them in the future. And so I thought it was very interesting that Judge McFadden, even though he ruled in their favor, basically said, look, even though you have the legal authority to do this, you may want to think twice before you actually do it.
Zach, would you update our listeners on what the heck is going on with this this latest Joe Biden boondoggle? It seems like everything he touches turns into a complete and utter disaster. Regarding the student loan forgiveness program, Zach, is that forgiveness program, has it still been stayed? Is it still blocked? And I heard today that it's been punted to February, I think, for the court to actually hear argument on this. Zach, this doesn't seem to be that complicated, but now we're going to kick the can down the road, I guess, till February. Could you give our listeners an update on this?
Well, it's actually not as bad of news as it seems at first blush, Tim. You know, I think one of the shocking things, I know we've talked about it before, is that the Biden administration repeatedly takes actions that it knows it doesn't have the authority to.
Right.
But basically dares the courts to strike it down and knows that in that intervening gap of, you know, however many weeks or months it takes for a court to issue a ruling and work its way through the federal system, that they've essentially bought themselves some political runway to push their radical, lawless policies. Now, what happened in this case, the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals, they actually stopped the Biden administration's loan forgiveness plan from going into effect while it worked its way through the federal courts. And so what happened is the Biden administration came to the Supreme Court, was basically asking for this stay to be lifted so that the program could go into effect while it's being litigated. But the Supreme Court said, no, we're going to leave the stay in case. And by the way, we're actually going to go ahead and have it bypass a couple of steps the federal court process and come directly to us so we can get a final decision on this. So this is a somewhat unique step. It's one we're starting to see the court take more often, but essentially is what the Supreme Court has said is, you know, let's bypass, you know, these other lower federal courts. It's a very important case. Let it come straight to us at the U.S. Supreme Court. We're going to decide the issue finally, have oral arguments on the merits in February, and reach a final decision after that. So I think it'll be a very interesting case, a very important one. And for now, the Biden administration's student loan plan cannot go into effect.
Zach, on December 7th, the Supreme Court is set to hear the Moore versus Harper case, which deals with the North Carolina redistricting process. The Atlantic says that this case could have dire implications for American democracy. Is that hyperbole?
Chris, hyperbole, you mean to say the Atlantic would try to fear-monger and, you know, make outrageous claims? Shocked as always. Look, you're absolutely right to say that's hyperbole. You know, essentially what's being asked here is, what's the authority? How does the Constitution allocate authority between not only the state and the federal governments, but also within the state governments themselves when they're drawing federal congressional districts. And I think that's the key thing to remember in this case. The federal constitution gives state legislatures. In other parts of the constitution, they give certain powers to the states generally, they give powers to the executives of the states, and in some places, they designate legislature. And in this particular case, they designated the legislature as being the predominant body that's supposed to make election rules and procedures within their state. Mm-hmm. Now, what we've seen increasingly over the past several years is other state entities, whether it be the governor or in this case out of North Carolina, the state Supreme Court, purporting to override that authority on either a state statute or state constitutional grounds, that's something that's very problematic. It seems to clash with the plain text of the Constitution. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens with this case. And I also think it's important to keep in mind, you know, if someone thinks that a state legislature is acted inappropriately or has some kind of overstepped their authority, the Constitution provides for a backstop. It says that Congress can step in and make laws that essentially override the state legislatures in certain cases. And so this will be a very interesting case. But unfortunately, I think, you know, The Atlantic and others are, you know, hyping it up needlessly so. Mm.
Zach, what's coming up on the docket for the Supreme Court before the end of the year? Will they hear any more cases over the next few weeks in December, or are they on break until January?
No, they will hear a few more. They heard a very important one this week, the U.S. versus Texas case involving immigration-related issues, when the Biden administration is shockingly not enforcing immigration laws as they should. Next week, as you mentioned it, they're going to hear the creative case, the Roy Smith case. They're also going to hear Moore versus Harper. And so the court's going to be very busy hearing some very important cases before they take their winter hiatus in late December.
Zach,
excellent.
Thank you so much. And didn't get a chance to listen to the podcast today, but my wife is going out of town, so I will have plenty of time to listen. So I can't wait.
Well, I appreciate that, Chris. And this week, we actually talked about U.S. versus Texas, and we have a former ambassador and Kansas governor, Sam Brownback, to talk about the state of religious liberty, not only here within the United States, but also more globally as well. So it's an interesting conversation.
Senator Brownback was my late senator, don't call him late, Jim Talent. They were roommates when they were senators together.
Oh, excellent, excellent. Well, it was a great conversation, and I enjoyed getting a chance to chat with him. And I think he had some great insights into where we're going wrong on the religious liberty front.
Can't wait to listen.
Timely topic indeed. You can find that at TZ Smith on Twitter, heritage.org. Zach, always great catching up with you. Covered a lot of ground today, and we'll do it again next week. Zach, have a great weekend. Thanks for joining Chris and I.
Thanks, Zach.
Of course, good talking to you both. Mm-hmm. Take care.
You take care. Zach Smith there with the Heritage Foundation.
Florida in December. Lucky guy.
Yes, he is. He's a Floridian through and through. All right, it's 4:40 in the PM. We'll take a break here, and then when we come back, we'll speak to Chris about Chris's Corner.
Yeah, I was like, we got a guest coming up or something?
Just you. Chris will be discussing where he was and what he was up to the last couple of days.
Actually, it's going to be the Kanye West quote-unquote meltdown.
Featured on, where was he? He was on,
Alex Jones show.
Alex Jones. Maybe the last place Kanye West should be going, but we'll see what Chris thought about his appearance there when we return here on the Tim Jones and Chris Sharp Show at 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL. Welcome home.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Welcome back to the Tim Jones and Chris Sharp Show.
Still rocking.
The Doobies have extensive connections to St. Louis, right?
Yes. One lead singer. Is there any other person from St. Louis, or is it Michael McDonald?
I think it's just Michael.
Yes. Just Michael.
Mm-hmm. You know, a little story here I'll share with you real quick since you brought it up. Mm-hmm. Kathy and I were at a concert a few years ago. Michael did, I think it was a Christmas concert at Stiefel.
I think I remember that. Yeah.
And he brought out Bonnie Bramlett.
Oh.
That was a shocker, and it was great to see Bonnie, and she may still live on the east side. I believe, didn't she grow up in the Granite City?
Still, I have to admit, that was a fake exasperation. I don't know. I have to admit, that was fake. I have no idea who she is.
Delaney and Bonnie? Does that ring a bell from the late 60s, early 70s?
Is that a purse? Delaney and Bonnie?
Sounds like it should be. Or a food store. Fancy food store.
Great. No, I don't know.
That's all right. Great singer. Right. Did a lot of stuff with a lot of rock bands back in the late 60s, early 70s. And Bonnie still had some great vocals that night. And it was just a total surprise to see her show up on the stage. Mm. He introduced her as a special guest. And here she saunters out onto the stage. And I'm thinking, that's Bonnie Bramlett. And sure enough, he introduced her. And that was a neat part of that concert. So Michael tied that all together that night.
Excellent, excellent. And you brought this song in. I told you that, what's the song that I said that I one of my doobie favorites? What a Fool Believes. But right. I forgot about this. This is probably second in my all-time doobie list.
You're welcome.
Maybe I shouldn't doobie list. I'm like, never mind.
You're doobie list.
You know what I mean.
All of a sudden, I'm back in the door.
Yeah, the doobie list.
Make sure you tag that, Chris.
The doobie list.
We're going to talk about... that's a nice little drop. Yes, got my doobie list. Just aren't saying that.
You know what? I remember back when Romper Room, though, one of the B was called Doobie. Remember that still? Doobie the B?
Yes.
Doobie.
Yeah. Yes.
I sort of remember Romper Room. Yeah.
Oh, Romper Room.
Hey, speaking of harmony, and voices, hard to beat good harmony and voices, I feel like we should play, I don't know if you can insert this anywhere before the end of the show, still over the next hour or so. I just want to give a little homage to the passing of Christine McVie Fleetwood Mac. I'm not a huge Fleetwood Mac fan, but I am a fan. My wife, Suzanne's a big Fleetwood Mac fan. And when I heard that she passed, and then Vic played a lot of Fleetwood Mac yesterday. Man, she was so talented. Mm-hmm. You know, another one of those. You hear her start singing, it's like I can name that person in two notes. You know?
And the sad thing too is these '60s rock stars, they're in their early 80s to mid 80s, and unfortunately they're going to be a lot more iconic rock stars that we're going to be waking up or getting the message over our phone that they have passed on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, hey, the Chris's Corner today is going to be on Kanye West's recent quote unquote meltdown. I'm going to give my opinion here in Chris's Corner.
Chris.
The whole thing is a joke.
Good God, we gotta do something here, people.
It's not personal, it's strictly business.
My favorite black leader of all time is Frederick Douglass, who asked after emancipation, well, we just freed the blacks, now what are we gonna do? And his answer was, leave us alone.
And if you don't know, now you know.
And now, Chris's Corner.
You know, if you've been following the latest situation with Kanye West, now known as Ye, you know that he had, quote unquote, another meltdown on the Alex Jones show the other day. Mr. Ye appeared on the set with a black mask on. He also apparently wore a Star of David with a swastika inside of that, and really said some extremely inflammatory things where I think he has effectively ended his career. You know, people have been saying for years, and he admitted that he had bipolar disorder, and that a lot of times that he doesn't take his medication. I think also that you can see sort of the decline of Kanye West after his mother died after liposuction surgery. She was a huge influence in his life. She was his manager. She was his everything. And you've kind of seen a decline in that. I don't want to say that Kanye West is crazy or mental or off his meds. I think Kanye West is a very intelligent man, and I think he knows exactly what he is doing. And I think what we're witnessing right now is a man who basically says, I have absolutely nothing to lose now. You have the IRS is allegedly suing him for $50 million. He has lost his family and his kids. He has to pay his wife $200,000 in alimony now, and he's given her the house next door that he bought to be close to his kids. He has seen his personal fortune go from $1.5 billion to $400,000, and now he is basically basically a pariah within the entertainment industry where he has made his living and his fame. And I think what we are witnessing is a man that is extremely frustrated, and he blames a certain segment of the population, the Jews, for quote unquote controlling him and taking away his freedom of speech. I think that's what this is all about more than anything. I don't think Kanye West is crazy. I think he is frustrated. And unfortunately, the route that he has taken to express that frustration has made his situation even worse. I have to tell you, I fear for Kanye West and his life. I'm not usually a conspiracy theory type of person, but if Kanye West is passes on in the next few weeks or days or whatever, I will be very skeptical if it's ruled a suicide. I've talked about this earlier in the week on my Chris's Corners about the music industry and the demonic influences that are involved in it. Ye, a few years ago at a concert, mentioned that he was the devil was in control of his music, and he had basically signed a blood contract. I've mentioned on here before of Bob Dylan doing a interview with 60 Minutes years ago where he said that the reason that he was able to have the fame that he did is because he signed a contract with the man. These are his own words. You can look all this stuff up. And there's another report that I saw recently. I'd never heard of the group, but Cigarettes and Dragons or something like that. The lead singer said, I know I shouldn't be saying this stuff, but he said the Illuminati is real, that we sign blood contracts in order to have the fame that we are, and something happens to me, you know, it happens to me. I know this sounds crazy. I said earlier in the week about Gus Fring that these people, the easiest way to deceive people is to be right out in plain sight. And we've seen that with the Balenciaga, where they have slowed down the tape of the video, and it spells out Baal, one of the evil prophets in the Bible, B-A-A-L. These people are literally hiding in plain sight, and because of that, I fear for Kanye West. I would not be shocked. I hope nothing happens to him. I hope he has a very long life with his family. I hope that he can get over the extreme frustration that he has, that I think that is misplaced against a group of people. I think that you can be mad at people that run a certain industries that you are in, but to condemn a whole race and a whole group, that's where it goes so far. You know, I said before that if he had any issue, he should have mentioned the people that were with these companies. Don't slight an entire race. And I think that's where he has made his mistake. But, you know, we are a redemptive society, the society now. We see that people get second chances. But, guys, I got to tell you, after yesterday where he said Hitler basically had good traits and that you can't condemn him and all that, I just don't see him ever, ever making a comeback in the entertainment industry ever again. And that is Chris's Corner.
So is Kanye, is this like, in his mind, do you think this is some master plan of his where he's like going to like, okay, I'm going to tear everything down and blow everything up, and then I'm going to come back reborn again? Or do you think he's just kind of wildly just kind of whipsawing back? He seems like he's mad at somebody.
What does he have to lose? He's got the IRS is suing him for $50 million. Ooh. You just lost your family. Your fortune has been cut 2/3. You are an absolute pariah to everybody now because of your actions. I think, and he's lashing out in a way that is not good. And it's one of these things where you wish that he had someone in his life that if he went to them and said, hey, I'm considering saying this, doing this, that somebody could stop him and say, look, I understand your frustration and your pain and everything, but think about what you're doing. This is not a good idea. Think about the legacy of your kids. you know, your kids are going to be walking around and people are going to pointing at their father. You're an anti-Semite. You love mm-hmm. Hitler. Think mm-hmm. about your kids, Ye, mm-hmm. instead of the frustration that you're feeling by these industry executives.
And does he have a top? Does he have a friend, an advisor? Does he have a confidant? Is there somebody?
Yeah, Nick Fuentes and Milo Yiannopoulos. Now, that's his friend. They're running his campaigns. Every event that he goes to, they're with him. So that's his boys now.
I just don't know much about him. So I was wondering, is there a person that has helped him along with his career that he trusts? Does he have an advisor?
Well, I said his wife. His mother was his manager.
So his mom being gone, you believe, is a big part of this.
Oh, big time. That's when he kind of went off the rails. That's when his first incident, when he went up on stage and took the mic from Kelly Clarkson or whatever and said that Beyonce should have won best album or something. That was a few, you know, felt relatively close to when his mother died. But I don't think he's crazy. I don't think he's nuts. He's very intelligent. I think he's just misguided and misdirected right now. And he's like, I'm going to burn the whole damn thing down.
Yeah. Time will tell if this is the end of Ye or the beginning of a new chapter. We'll see what happens, man. America's a wild place, that is for sure. All right, we've got to get out of this segment. We've got the 5 o'clock hour straight ahead, the speaker stump speech. I'm going to prepare us for our 525 guest that we can talk to Dr. Hedlund about exploring this deeper and further. The jobs report came out today. Of course, the Joe Biden administration is crowing about it. Are there warning signs? That next, News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.